Welcome to the Strong Like Mum podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Strong Like Mum podcast. And today I'm really excited to be talking to Annabel Knight, relationship expert, couples coach and author of women's fiction and romance novels such as The Matchmaker's Match. Hello, Annabel.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, your voice even sounds sexy. You're like, hello.
Oh, thank you. It's because I'm the first human I've spoken to today.
Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited to talk to you. We're going to be talking about sex and intimacy as parents and after birth. So firstly, if you can just tell us a little bit more about what you do.
Oh my goodness, where to start? So I am a UK-based sex and relationships expert. I have qualifications in couples counselling, psychosexual therapy and life coaching. I write romance novels on the side. And I guess the best way to kind of describe what I do and what I want to do is I want to help people have the happiest and healthiest relationships that they can.
So what does happy and healthy look like? What's a happy and healthy sex life? So I was doing some reading just now and I was reading that according to a report, people between 18 and 29 are having the most sex, and they average 112 sex sessions per year, so roughly twice a week. And then that 30 to 39 category is about 1.6 times a week. I don't know what 1.6 times looks like, but
that's like really like 2.4 children. And then,
yeah, exactly. Interrupted sex. And then from 40 to 49, only 69 times a year. So maybe that could be stress or, you know, other lifestyle issues that are coming up. But what is health? What is a healthy sex life?
So that is really entirely dependent on the individual as an individual and then the individual within their relationship and also the relationship dynamic itself. We have what we call your signature sexual style, and that is completely exclusive to each and unique to each individual couple. So when we're talking about kind of health and happiness of a relationship, we are talking on an individual kind of macro level. And that means what works for you. So as long as both partners are happy and contented with the romance levels, the intimacy levels, the physical levels, then that is both happy and healthy. It's when there's a mismatch when things start to go awry.
And how important is that word romance? Because I know that when we started having children and our lives got so much busier and our alone time really started to shrink down, that was something that I would talk to my husband about a lot. It was that romance and finding time for that intimacy that isn't the sexual intimacy, but is kind of the emotional intimacy. How important is that romance, and how do you, you know, how can you keep that alive when you've both got really busy schedules? And is it important to keep that alive?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole kind of idea that it just happens naturally is a myth. And I think a lot of people kind of put it on the back burner and think, you know, like we'll revisit that, we'll come back to that. But the truth is, it's kind of like, well, it's kind of like anything. The less you do, the less you think about it, and the less important it becomes until it becomes of such great importance that it's really difficult to kind of come full circle. So when we're talking about romance, we're not necessarily meaning like, you know, candlelit dinners and going to the top of the Eiffel Tower and things like that. It's little moments, little intimate moments in your day-to-day life that you can come back to as moments of connection. So that might be, so there's something that I absolutely love, kettle kisses. If you just make the time it takes for your kettle to boil in the morning a moment where you and your partner have some eye contact, you have a kiss, you have a cuddle, just a moment that's yours, you have a connection that you have made every single day. So you're not going a day, 2 days, 3 days, or even a week without having those moments. And it's not so much about quantity, it's about the quality of those moments you spend together.
I think in those that early stage of parenthood, what I found really difficult was separating the way I saw my body. You know, like with a baby that was breastfeeding, I felt very much like it, my body had this real maternal purpose and I was breastfeeding my baby. And blah, blah. And then I would actually really struggle with all of a sudden my husband coming up to me and wanting to put his arms around, you know, and suddenly viewing my body as something that was desirable in a sexual way. And I was, I really found that difficult. Is that something that you encounter
that is
a lot with
me? Like a completely usual, and I really hate using the word normal, but it really is a completely normal set of emotions to go through. I think if you try and take the pressure off yourself as well, especially in the early stages, and it's absolutely fine to say, do you know what? For however many weeks, however many months, let's just try and get the parenting thing right, because you cannot be all things to everyone all at once. So it's better to be like a master of one trade than a jack of all. So in those early stages, really focus on, you know, what it's like to be parents. Enjoy those moments, because those moments don't come round again very often. And if you're trying to split your responsibilities and trying to stay, you know, sexy for yourself or for your relationship, you're just going to end up resenting those moments and missing big moments with your child. So it's really important to redefine those relationships quite early on and set boundaries, and for yourself as much as anyone else, and realign your expectations so that your reality can meet them. Because if you like, I hate the saying, oh, shoot for the moon, and if you miss, you'll land in the stars. I get what that's trying to say, but ultimately it's saying push yourself as to the furthest corners of your ability, which just leaves us exhausted. So, you know, small steps, take each day as it comes, have some kind of roadmap where you would like to see yourself by your baby's first birthday as an individual and as a couple. And, you know, just take the pressure off. Try not to feel so much responsibility, because it's already the biggest job you could possibly have. Why make things more difficult for yourself?
So pressure is a really interesting one. This, as I said, this is coming out around Valentine's Day, and that is a day where we may feel a lot of pressure to have mm-hmm. to engage in sexual, you know, in sexual activities with our partner. How do we, you know, as we've just talked about, there might be pressures about having sex after having children. How else can you relieve that pressure? What are kind of your, you know, your top tips? You obviously talked about it a little bit there.
Well, I think removing like performative sex and connection from the table. So instead of when you, like, say, for example, if you are getting a bit more intimate with your partner, you can quickly kind of fall short of what your own expectations are by putting too much, again, we're using the word pressure, but having too many expectations of what that's going to be. Oh, I need to climax. They need to have a good time. I need to look amazing. So if we strip that away and kind of free ourselves to enjoy intimacy rather than sex, everything becomes more connective emotionally, physically, and intellectually as well. So what I would always say is take the idea of orgasm off the table. Like, if that happens, that's great. But really work on, it's DPES. So it's desire, pleasure, eroticism, and sensuality. And if your intimate sessions revolve around those ideals instead of climax being your end goal, you're going to have a much more enjoyable experience. And then if you don't reach climax, it doesn't actually matter, because you've had a great time, you've connected with your partner, and ultimately that's what intimacy and sex is all about. And I think we have this misguided idea societally that sex is either penetrative or it's to achieve something like orgasm, when really it's about expanding your pleasure horizons, feeling connected to your partner, and just enjoying yourself.
Yeah. Is that so? Let's say that someone's listening to this podcast and that's really resonated with them, and they're like, okay, yeah, that's great. You know, I've never really considered sex without climax and that being something that, mm-hmm. you know, is that something you suggest that women go to their partners with and say, look, can we make this our focus as opposed to this being the focus? Because I can imagine
absolutely.
That for you, there might be a disconnect.
It doesn't necessarily have to be this like sit down conversation where you say, right, from now on, I think we should do X, Y, and Z. It can be more of a kind of organic experience, like suggesting sensual massage instead, or reading erotic fiction together. I mean, there are so many things you can do that are sexy without having sex. And quite often people report back and say, well, once we took that off the table, it was actually the thing we wanted to do without having the pressure of having to do it. So you may surprise yourself and find that, you know, without sex and climax being on the table, it's something that you more naturally gravitate towards too. You know, we always want what we can't have.
Yeah, I can imagine that. So do our sexual needs mature and change as we do? So, you know, do you see that kind of change as we move, you know, as we get older?
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's kind of like, do you like the exact same foods you did when you were 20? No, your palate changes as you experience more, you know, different tastes. Your desires around that alter. And that is exactly the same for sex, except, you know, we have a ton of other things in the mix, such as having children or our hormonal changes. We have the menopause and perimenopause to contend with. And all of those inform our sexual wants and needs. So, yeah, if you, you know, want to try something new and you're thinking, oh, goodness, well, why am I suddenly interested in this? It's probably because you're maturing sexually. And that's not to say that you were immature before. It's just that, you know, everything changes as we get older. Like, for goodness sake, my hair is not the same hair I had when I was 20. It's thinner, it's stragglier. It's in need of extensions. But you know, so everything does change as you get older. And it, you know, that is something that aligns with our diversity of experience, our hormonal shifts, even the things we are exposed to. So you may see something in a film and you've never even thought of that before, and suddenly you're like, hey, 50 Shades of Grey has really given me, you know, opened my eyes to something. It's little things like that.
And how much of a journey of kind of self-discovery do we need to go on to figure that out? Is that something where you're like, look, you know, solo sex and masturbation is something that you would really encourage people to continue exploring so that they can then take that to their partner and say, look, this is something I want to do? Or is it something you should do together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there is, regardless of how often you're having sex or how amazing the sex you're having is, there is always room for self-discovery and self-experimentation. I think it's so important, especially, you know, as we get older and our bodies change, to know what our normal is, and normal is in inverted commas, just from a health and kind of safety perspective. If there are changes in our bodies, we need to know, you know, what it was like before, what it's like now, and how that feels differently, so we can communicate that if we need to. And then aside from kind of the medical side of things, you need to know what works for you before you can expect someone else to be able to do that. So
yeah,
it's really important to masturbate, not only for, you know, keeping your relationship going, but also it's scientifically proven to improve your health. And, you know, off the back of COVID, who doesn't want to have great health? It bolsters your immune system. It decreases your risks of cold and flu. And it stops you, it literally prevents you from having certain types of tension headaches. So especially if you've got kids in the house and they are screaming and shouting and taking up all of your time, you know, an orgasm a day might just curb any headaches you might have.
And what about something that you don't like? So, you know, let's say we've got to a place where we can really communicate something we want to try with our partner. What if your partner suggests something that you don't want to do? How do you, you know, is it about compromise in the bedroom, or can you draw a line?
So that is a really interesting and quite often tricky subject matter to tread across, because I, for a lot of us sex educators, we say, you know, you can't know you don't like something until you've tried it. But I think what you have to do is explore personally why you might be apprehensive about trying this. It may be that you've already done it with a partner somewhere else down the line. It didn't do it for you then, and you're pretty sure it's not going to do it for you now. Or it may be that, you know, a lot of us carry quite a lot of shame around sex, and we can't really explain why we feel certain ways. We just have this knee-jerk reaction to, no, I don't want to do that. And if you're steadfast in that belief, that's great. Never do anything you really don't want to do. But it is good to challenge ourselves sexually. And there may be a compromise reached where, I don't know, say if it's a bondage, for example, off the top of my head. Say if your partner suddenly is interested in, I don't know, you being submissive and tying you up, but you really don't want to relinquish all that control. there are other ways you can make yourself submissive without losing control, such as a blindfold, for example. And that has been actually proven to really increase how you receive pleasure, because it's limiting one of your senses, so everything else is increased. But yeah, there's always a compromise to be made. I would definitely say have a little look inwardly and see if there's anything maybe in your past that is meaning you're going to be reacting this way. And if there isn't, then either step out of your comfort zone comfortably, and if that means having a safe word so that you can just say, I don't know, what's in front of me right now? Scissors. You can say scissors, and your partner knows immediately that that means stop, no judgment, we're not doing that anymore. And then you can move on to the next thing. Just having that little safety net can quite often give you the courage and the confidence to explore a little bit more.
And just as a completely aside, why do you need a safety net? Why can't you just say, no, stop, I don't like it? Is it because it just would
and I am going back to kind of light bondage and bondage things. Resistance is part of the dance. So you may want to explore and experiment with kind of reluctance and power balances. So if you say, oh, no, that could be, and you never want that to be misinterpreted as someone kind of just playing their part in the role.
Okay.
So if you're choosing a safe word, choose something that you would never in a million years say in the bedroom. I did read a stat last year, and apparently Donald Trump was one of the top safe words within couples because it was the least sexiest thing people could think of. So, I mean, I am not yelling out Donald Trump in any scenario. But yeah, that was a popular one.
That's hilarious. Is our sex drive connected to our menstrual cycle? So this might be oversharing, but I always feel like there'll be certain times in my cycle, usually around when I'm ovulating, and I'm really interested in kind of animal instinct.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have a much higher sex
that
drive.
Is nature's way of
making babies.
Making babies, yeah. You will feel hornier, you'll feel sexier around ovulation. And that is kind of a pretty much carbon copy experience for anyone who has a period across the globe. When we are ovulating, we are like in peak fertility, and we are, you know, our bodies are saying, put a baby in me, please. So that's kind of what we act out on. And it's really funny. I had a boyfriend once who he was gay, but he was my boyfriend when we were teenagers, and he had this sixth sense. If I was interested, he was like, and we were teenagers. He was so progressive. He was like, he didn't really understand what we were going through, but he was like, is it your time of the month? Because you won't leave me alone.
And yeah, exactly.
Like, don't know how to take that, but yes, it's almost.
I know. I honestly think that all the time, and it's just so interesting how that animal instinct, you know, works. So on those times, and just a couple more questions now before we wrap up, on those times where it's, where it's not the time where you're really particularly wanting to have a lot of sex, and forgive me, I know that I've asked this question sort of in a different way earlier, but how can we make ourselves feel more sexy? I remember speaking to someone who said, well, I can't remember how she phrased it now, but she was basically saying, look, you know, just take a moment in the day to do something that makes you feel like in touch with whether, and she said for her children were older, she was like, at, you know, 5 p.m. she would get a glass of wine and she would sit down, and that would be her time, and that would be kind of her way to get into feeling sexy in a way. Like, is that, how should we, or how could we boost
you
that
can definitely ourselves? Kind of like have a Pavlovian response to intimacy by training yourself. Like, that would be her routine, that would be the actions she would do to, for her brain to say, right, we are getting into the swing of things, we're getting in the mood now. I completely agree with that. I think definitely taking time for you to do whatever it is that makes you feel, it doesn't necessarily have to be something that makes you feel sexy, but something that makes you feel confident and powerful and in tune with your femininity and yourself is really important. There's a
Or relaxed, possibly.
Yeah, exactly. Anything that puts you in a different kind of mental and physical state than what is just your run-of-the-mill day. Because ultimately, what we're trying to achieve is for you to feel differently about yourself. There's a woman called Madame Storm, and she is a confidence coach and sensuality expert. And she has the best advice for anyone who's kind of wanting to regain control of their sexuality and their sensuality. And she says this one thing, which I do. And I mean, I can't tell you how good it is. And it's the simplest thing, but it is to make eye contact with yourself in the mirror. Because when you make eye contact with someone, you produce serotonin and oxytocin, which are feel-good chemicals, and they help you feel more attuned to intimacy. So if you're making eye contact with yourself, you're starting to feel more intimate with yourself. And it gets a little bit weird at points, but once you push past that, you just go into this kind of zen-like state of, okay, yeah, I'm feeling this. I really am feeling this. And I love it. I think, you know, self-eye-gazing is like the unsung hero of sexuality and confidence.
Who knew? I've never heard that, but that's really interesting. And so I've got two more questions in my mind. The first one is, can we separate? I know we spoke earlier about sort of romance and intimacy, but what happens if we're arguing with our partner but we really want to have sex? I would always be like, I am not going to have sex, because I would be like, that's rewarding when I don't want it, you know. And I would be like, I am not going to give that when I don't feel this. But can we and should we be able to separate the two and be like, do you know what? This is just what this is between the two of us. And actually, we can keep that separate.
Well, I think that would be quite difficult to be like sexually intimate with someone that you're currently having a fight with, because when we are in stages of stress or tension, we have a lot of cortisol running through our systems, and cortisol is essentially a toxic element when it comes to sex and desire and libido. So I would say it would be more difficult for you physically to get over the fight to have sex. If, however, you are still horny, there is nothing stopping you having sex with yourself and really rubbing their faces in it. Like, you could have had this if you'd have behaved. But, you know, there are certain things, like, you know, if you're trying to have a child, if you're trying to conceive and you have, you know, a limited amount of time in which to have sex, you, of course, can power through. But powering through isn't necessarily something I would advise. Again, it's your, you know, your individual sexual style. If that doesn't bother you and you're like, actually, we can have a screaming match 1 minute and then be locking lips the next, I mean, more power to you. I don't know how anyone does that, because it takes me a good like night's sleep to kind of realign everything. But yeah, I think it is possible to separate, you know, sex from romance, but I don't think you should have to.
Okay. And again, we're doing this around Valentine's Day. What are kind of three little ways that we can spice up our sex life? You mentioned taking away one of the senses, and that might mm-hmm. heighten other areas. What other things can we do that will just, you know, make things feel a bit different, or that might be able to...
Oh my goodness, I love this question. This is like my favorite one to answer. So one of the kind of most fun ways you can explore new sexual experiences with your partner is to make yourself a little list, 3, 5, 10, 20, however many things you want, of new experiences that you would like to try, and cross-examine lists. Yes, no, maybe, and then see where you land, and quite often
you come,
find that there is definitely something you've both been thinking about. And then you basically give yourself permission to experiment. And if you don't like it, great, never have to do it again. But it's all part of kind of being a trisexual and trying things and seeing how it lands for you and for your partner. So definitely the list making. The limiting a sense, oh my goodness, you don't even have to spend any money. If you've got a tie in your house, if your partner has an office job and has to wear a tie, even a pair of socks, even the pillow or whatever, close your eyes. You don't have to spend any money to have a new sexual experience that kind of treads the line of the taboo. So blindfolding, or we call it sensory deprivation play, something like that is amazing. And then also experiment with temperature, hot and cold play. Have a cup of tea and a glass of ice water by your bed. a sip of one, a sip of the other, and then just kiss your partner and see how that goes. Because honestly, the change in temperature makes all the blood rush to the surface of your skin. It makes you more sensitive. It makes you more responsive to your partner's touch. And ultimately, it can change the entire way you feel. So you can be having the same sex that you've had with the same person for so many years, and suddenly everything feels different, which heightens our kind of, it piques our sensuality and our sexual kind of prowessness. So it's really good to experiment with temperature as well.
That's such good advice. Thank you so much for your time. I think we've covered a lot in the short period of time, but you are obviously incredibly knowledgeable about what you do. Where can people find more about you? Where can they find you online?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm on social media, Annabelle Knight. Just Google that in the search bar I'm showing my age, aren't I? search for me on social media. I'm on Instagram and Twitter, or you can go to annabellknight.com for more work-related stuff.
Well, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you.
Thanks for joining me, and I hope you can tune in again soon to another episode of the Strong Like Mum podcast.
Mum, what about that?